My guest today is Dr. Amy Robbins. She practices both traditional psychotherapy and embraces her spiritual intuition. Dr. Robbins is the host of Life, Death, and the Space Between, a podcast that hosts thought leaders and change makers who are interested in exploring the nature of consciousness and whose curiosity about healing and death bridge both science and spirituality. She hosts this podcast with a kindness, curiosity, and healthy skepticism.
Welcome to Interspecies Evolution. The purpose of this podcast is to highlight human consciousness and how our self-awareness can lead to our honoring animals as conscious beings as well. We have gathered more than 36 people with unique experiences and education, inviting them to share their journeys and how their relationships with animals have changed along the way. If you are seeking inspiration on your own journey of awakening, or simply want to improve your relationships with animals, we invite you to join us, because it is time for Interspecies Evolution. Here's your host, Jenny Jablonski.
Welcome, Dr. Robbins.
Thank you, Jenny.
I'm really excited to have you on the podcast. When I started thinking that I would do my own podcast, you were in my list of top 10 people that I wanted to invite on.
Oh, thank you. And thank you for being persistent, because I think you responded and I said yes, and then I didn't get back to you right away. So I appreciate you following up with me, because I'm really excited to be here talking with you and your listeners today.
It seems to be a hot topic these days. I just recently interviewed a doctor who wrote a book called Science, Being, and Becoming. You know, Rupert Sheldrake and his book Set Science Free. There are so many highly educated people who are willing to talk about alternative conversations and entertain alternative research. And you have had so many amazing guests, from Dr. Lipton, Bruce Lipton, to many other change makers. It's been so impressive to watch your podcast flourish. I'd like to focus on you today. Turn the tables on you. I would like to know about your own inner journey and how that overlapped or coincided or not with your educational process, your degree in psychology, and how you have taken upon yourself to bridge the gap between science and spirituality.
First of all, my journey really, they ran parallel tracks. I experienced the death of my aunt. I was 18. She was 48 at the time. Just as I was a freshman in college and starting to, obviously, that's a time of exploration of trying to figure out who we are, who we want to be, what we want to do with our lives. And at that time, I was a psych undergrad major and didn't know what I wanted to do, and went through undergraduate studying psychology in the traditional sense, and ended up not quite sure what I wanted to do after graduate school, but really, I mean, after undergrad, ended up working in a job that I didn't like. I was very unhappy, which I actually now realize had a lot to do with unprocessed grief, I think, and the anxiety that I had around some connections I had made about my aunt's death and what that would mean for my life. And she was the oldest of three children. I was the oldest of three children. And how I perceived her was very, like, she was sick. She had juvenile onset diabetes. She ended up dying. She was waiting for a kidney and pancreas transplant. So she was on the list for the transplant, and ended up, when they went in to make sure that her physical body would be strong enough to withstand the transplant, they realized that she had had several heart attacks. So they needed to go in and repair her heart. And when they went in to repair her heart, she died on the table. So I got that call that so many of us get, where we are literally brought to our knees because we can't believe that this happened, right? We just kind of, we get that call that someone died, and it can be such a shock to our system. And I think I never really dealt with that grief and made a lot of associations to how my life was going to be like her life. So I started working in radio advertising and was really, really, really unhappy, like probably the lowest point in my life. pretty depressed, pretty anxious. I had this incredible degree from the University of Michigan. And what would people think about me given that I had no direction? So I ended up quitting that job and waiting tables and trying to figure my life out. And it was the best thing I ever did. Everybody should wait tables, I think. But I still carry around this thing in my wallet that says, if a person's nice to you but rude to the waiter, they're not a nice person. Because I think that that speaks, it spoke volumes to me in terms of like how I felt and how I was treated and, you know, what people said about me to my face at the table. I mean, it was just shocking. But on this journey, I realized that I really did want to help people. And so I volunteered and I ended up going back to grad school. So for a long time, the spiritual wasn't even part of my journey. And then when I was in grad school, I had my first visit from my aunt, who obviously was dead. But came to me and shared with me. She came to me shortly before my cousin, her son's wedding. And she said, she showed me this image of my mom standing at the kitchen sink. And she said, tell your mom she doesn't need to be sad. I'm going to be at the wedding. And then I had another image of my uncle, her brother. And she said, tell him that I see him when he talks to me. I hear him when he's out walking and pushing the stroller. And I know what he's saying to me. So I called my mom as soon as I woke up, and I use that term loosely because I mean, yes, I was asleep, and it was that kind of in-between state where you wake up and you fall back asleep, and that's when she visited. But it was as real as you and I mean, you know this, right? You're intuitive. It was as real as you and I are talking today. So I called my mom and I said, Mom, I had this crazy, I don't even want to call it a dream. Aunt Linda came to me and she told me, you don't need to be sad. She's going to be at the wedding. You don't need to cry. And my mom said to me, I was standing at the kitchen sink last night talking to Aunt Linda, telling her, I can't believe you're not going to be at the wedding. I can't believe you're not going to be at the wedding. So that was really, and then the same thing with my uncle. I called him, my uncle, the doctor. So was my grandfather. So both of them were very materialist in their thinking. Like they believe when you die, you die. The soul does, you know, there's nothing else. And he said the same thing. That's when I talk to her, when I'm out. And so I knew that there was something more there. And I went into school that day and I spoke to a professor of mine who I'm still really close to, who I believe is the reason why I even continued to pursue this. And she said to me, I think you had a visit. And I had no idea what that was. And she gave me some books like Sylvia Brown, who was like kind of the big psychic at the time. And here I'm thinking like, this is my professor who's teaching me about Freud and transference and countertransference. And she's like giving me books on the side about Sylvia Brown, the psychic. And she said, I think you need to go talk to a medium. And she gave me the name of a friend. And I didn't do anything with it. I was like, okay, I don't know. I'm not really interested in this. And then time went on and it happened again when my grandfather died. And then it happened again with the patients, it started happening with patients' loved ones, where their loved ones were coming to me, same space in that like in between space, giving me messages. And at that point, I really didn't know what to do with that and wanted to kind of figure out, okay. And this was about maybe 5 years into practicing, 4 or 5 years. So I had already gone through 5 years of grad school. I was practicing for 5 years on my own. And that's when this really started picking up for me. I think, you know, I had to kind of get through some of the like meat of my life, having children, getting through grad school, and then things even started to open up more. And I think this is really important because I think when people think about like having a spiritual awakening or having like these transcendent experiences, like maybe they happen once and you have them and it's like a huge awakening. But really for me, it's been over the course of 20 years where I've had these moments where it just becomes irrefutable to me that there is something more in this world. And it's not like it happens for me every day. It's not like I'm constantly having these like crazy intuition from dead loved ones. It's not like that at all. But it has been a slow opening, almost like, I mean, I'm using this image, but like a flower that just slowly opens and blooms. And I think that's really important for people to know that this is a journey. It's not, you have this experience and suddenly you're like, everything is different. And I mean, it was, but it takes time to keep kind of opening up in that way.
Have you studied any of the Jungian psychology, dream interpretation? I mean, I wish in college they taught more about Jung's actual life and his works that were published at the end of his life in his 80s, a series of wonderful, incredible books. And I have the giant version of the Red Book, which I think it's now somewhere around $200, written in German, beautiful illustrations. Mm-hmm. Have you studied any of that?
I in grad school I did. And again, like if I could go back to grad school now, the courses I would choose and what that path would look like would be totally different. Jung, where I went, wasn't really one of the cornerstones of what they taught. It was much more of a traditional analytic approach or a psychodynamic, what's called psychodynamic psychotherapy. Jung was really seen as sort of his own trailblazer, and he really was a huge influence in this. If he was around today, was really bridging that gap between spirituality and psychology. But as a disciple of Freud, you know, talking about the unconscious as well and how that gets, you know, he was a springboard from that. And that's where I think the dreams and the interpretations come in. You know, I've read a lot of Freud dream work stuff, but not as much Jungian psychology. But I probably should revisit that.
Well, and nowadays there's esoteric psychology, somatic psychology, transpersonal psychology.
Contemplative.
That aren't didactic psychology. All of these are really new within the last decade or two.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much. I was actually talking to a friend just yesterday who's studying at the Institute for Psychoanalysis here in Chicago. And I was asking her just how ingrained psychoanalysts are thinking about all the changes that have happened over the course of probably the 50 years they've been practicing, right? Many of those clinicians were trained in a traditional psychoanalytic approach, and things have shifted so drastically that, you know, I was curious just to hear how they were incorporating that. And so for me, I've really found that I've kind of paved my own way in terms of thinking about how to integrate intuition and spirituality into the work that I do. And I think, you know, most clinicians over time develop an intuition because, I mean, we have intuition, but then it's also like something that I think is that you gain over time. You know, it's like a combination of wisdom and knowing. Like you just come to it in time that, oh, this feels that way, or this is familiar to me. And then you move from that place, which is very different than like, oh, what the book say.
Right. I would love to see you interview Peter Levine, Robert Swartz, Dr. Gabor Mate. I really feel like that those would be fantastic interviews for you.
Yeah, I actually have Gabor on a list for me, and I have a connection to him, but I know he just had his new book come out, The Myth of Normal. And so I'm like holding off a little bit till he gets off the like crazy cycle, which I think it already happened. Like, I feel like they go through so fast. But yeah, I mean, I think it's really interesting also to think about how, you know, in psychology, when you've been doing this work, you see pieces of all of this. You know, it's not as separate as we've made it, like everything, right? It's like everything has a piece of something else. Everything has a flavor of something else. And so even when I read some of these works, I translate it into a language that works for me. You know, what does this look like in my clinical practice? How does this translate to or look like how I was trained? How do I integrate these pieces into understanding more about the human, you know, the human psyche, the human existence? Well, so just to kind of maybe complete the story for you a little bit more. So I started having those experiences, and then I went back to my professor again. This was probably 10 years later, and said, you know, I'm having these experiences again, and I don't know what to do with them. And she reminded me that she had given me this name years ago. And I reached out to that woman, and she was a medium, and she and I met. I did a reading with her, and she said, start meditating and see what comes up for you. And meditation again was not in the zeitgeist, you know, it wasn't in the consciousness as much as it is now. And so I left that meeting, and was really Lord. And so I sat in meditation. I started meditating. I started having these experiences and these insights. And so I brought them to her and I said, hey, this is what I'm seeing in my meditation. She said, I think you're connecting with my husband who had died. So she had lost a husband during the HIV AIDS pandemic, right? It was a pandemic then too, right? I feel like we've been COVID pandemic, like hijacked. And she said, you know, everything you're seeing is actually a lot of how he was towards the end of his life and how in his death, we acknowledge that he had died. And I think he wants me to teach you. So she and I worked together for 2 years. She really kind of taught me how to set boundaries, how to hone my skills, how to use my skills. Then I was like, yeah, I don't think I'm so interested in doing this. And I kept dipping my toe in the water, seeing if it felt right for me. And then I had another experience where a woman reached out and she said, I know you're interested in exploring spirituality and so am I. How about we do some readings together and we bring in friends and we do readings. And so we brought in some friends and she and I both did a reading for them. And I had said to this friend, you know, your father-in-law is here. And I shared all this information with him. And I said, he's showing me this ring, like a class ring with a blue stone. And she kind of laughed and chuckled. And she, unbeknownst to me, she went home and told her husband. And her husband laughed even harder because he said, my dad didn't wear jewelry. He never had jewelry. So like, I don't even think that was my dad. And 2 days later, he flew home to Philadelphia and his mom walked in the room and she said, I just found this of your dad's. I think he would want you to have it. And it was exactly the ring that I had described. And so he was blown away. I was blown away. I was like, okay, I really need to see what I can do here. I really need to see if I can dig into this a little bit further and really do readings for people. So I did what any psychologist, anyone who's been trained in anything would probably maybe not do but this is how I am, is I did an internship. I called it my internship, my spiritual internship. And I offered to do readings for friends, family, anybody who I didn't know a lot about, but I felt comfortable if I was wrong. And I did that. It was supposed to be a month and it turned out to be 3. And what I found in that is that while I did enjoy like the moment of giving someone the gift of feeling like they were connected with their loved one, I really felt like it was limiting to me because I was so used to doing deep work with people that was really transformative. And it felt like I also wasn't confident enough that I could deliver the messages consistently. And for someone who's going through grief and for someone who's struggling and coming to a medium because they really want that connection, I think it's extremely important that anybody who's doing that work is doing it from a place of integrity, from a place of deep connection and knowing that they are servicing someone and providing them a real gift of connection. And I wasn't sure that I could do that consistently. And so I decided that I wasn't going to. But I still had this like nagging feeling that I needed to do more with all of this. And that was where the podcast came out of. It was like, well, maybe if I share my experiences and my stories, and when I would share them with my friends who, my friends are all pretty science-minded people. I mean, I have friends who are therapists and doctors and lawyers and working in advertising and marketing. And they would all listen and be like, well, if she could have this experience, maybe I shouldn't write it off. No, maybe I'm pretty involved in my community. Like I think that obviously with spirituality, there's a lot that can be dismissed depending on the package in which it's presented in. And so I felt like I could maybe really bring this to people who were skeptical like me, who wanted to know from someone who had a real experience from a medical, a more scientific, more materialist mindset, that they have these experiences too. And that's really where the origin of the podcast came from. And it's evolved as if you've been listening for a while, you know, over time to what that looks like. And so I bring in real thought leaders in the realms of near-death experiences and mediumship and consciousness and quantum physics and alternative forms of healing and psychology and science, because I think if we can bring it all together, that's where amazing healing can happen. It's not siloing it off. Like the mind is not connected to the body, is not connected to the soul. They're all connected. And if we can think holistically about them, and that there could be multiple ways for people to heal. No one is the holy grail to healing. I don't believe that there's any one discipline that can say, if you do this, then you will be healed. I think collectively, there's so much knowledge and so much wisdom from all of these practices, and certainly from indigenous healing practices. I mean, that's where so much of this wisdom comes from.
Well, it's very true that a higher education brings with it a large amount of cultural authority. And although I would like to think it's going to be different, I'm pretty certain that people will still value education and degrees for decades to come.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's imperative that people who are educated, such as yourself, and who once were or continue to be skeptical, and who are concerned about integrity and validation and repeatable results and the whole kit and caboodle, that there will be those minds that shift because there are people like you leading the charge, people like Rupert Sheldrake, who, you know, once they laughed at him, totally dismissed him, then people got a little bit angry. And now so many people are willing to see what he sees. And as my friend Dr. Paul Mills spoke about in his book, Science, Being, and Becoming, he shared the spiritual lives and spiritual experiences of scientists in this book. He said that he not only wants to set science free, he wants to set scientists free. Mm-hmm. To be able to explore these conversations openly without feeling threatened, without their license being threatened. You know, Dr. Christiane Northrup lost her professorship when she wrote her book about menopause in the 90s. And this is a very famous person, and not many people know that fact.
Yeah. I mean, it was a risk for me too, because so many of the physicians who send me patients are physicians from Northwestern. I live in Chicago. And I called a few of them when I launched the podcast and said to them, you know, I just want to let you know I'm launching this podcast. It might be a bit controversial. You know, there's a lot that I talk about in here that isn't traditional medicine in the way that you probably think about it. And so I want you to know that in the event that you have a patient who comes to you because they went on my website and they saw that I have this podcast where I talk about, I mean, my second episode was I See Dead People. And so it's really important for me that you know this about me. And if you no longer want to refer to me, I totally get that. And I will respect that. I really hope that's not the case, because I hope that I've proven that I'm a solid therapist. But I understand, and it has not impacted me one bit in my work. Like, they continue to refer to me. I actually have a couple of other, you know, physicians who kind of come to me quietly to be like, hey, can you help me understand this experience? Like, I'm starting to have psychiatrists reach out to me and say, I'm really interested in learning more about past life regression or this or that. I've had these experiences, or I want to bring this more into the therapeutic work that I'm doing. How do you recommend that I do that? And that's been really helpful and inspirational for me to feel like, oh my God, there are people who are listening to this and feel connected to the work and are also thinking about it. And I think that when we shut down this conversation, particularly when we're seeing patients who've had experiences like this, and so many people, I forgot what percentage of people have, but it's a pretty high percentage of people that report some sort of synchronicity or sign or connection or visit or unexplainable coincidence, they might call it, in their life after a loved one has died. And if you don't allow that to be part of the therapeutic conversation, then you're really shutting down someone's healing process. If you're minimizing that experience, then you're shutting down someone's healing process. And we would never say to someone who brought in some sort of trauma, yeah, I don't believe that's real. I don't believe that's your experience. And yet with something like a visit or a synchronicity, we would dismiss it as not me, but some might dismiss it as like, oh, you just want to believe because it will help you with your grief. Or you know, the only reason you're believing is because you're avoiding the fact that when we die, we die. And I actually don't believe that's the case. I believe that there are many people who have these experiences and they're real.
And PMH Atwater is famous for documenting tens of thousands of near-death experiences. She has interviewed tens of thousands of people. And then there's NDERF and IANS and many organizations, which can be found in the resource section of my website if anybody's interested. So many people are talking about this today. And with the advent, the blessing of the internet and our ability to seek out these kinds of conversations, it's so lovely.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to ask you a question about something that I have a personal concern about, something that I have witnessed. And just a moment ago, you mentioned integrity, that you feel that, you know, people shouldn't offer services unless they've done a deep dive, unless they've done their own healing. They have a proven connection, validation. They've, whether it be interned or done the work for a long period of time. I certainly feel the same way. And I promote that on this podcast. Mm-hmm. Self-awareness study, understanding the energetic construct, which many scientists will say is a metaphor for the nervous system. And the human body has 40 miles of nerves, and it is filled with this amazing nano crystalline particulate that creates the most incredible computer nature has ever produced, the human body. And it holds the memories, the unprocessed memories, the emotions, the trauma, the stress. And when we release that, and we are able to fill ourselves with our own divine light, that consciousness that continues to live on beyond the physical body, we then know that many people can engage in these conversations and provide supportive services. And like you, I once had an experience, I'll just share quickly.
Yeah.
Maybe 7 years ago, my neighbor across the street, I live in a horse community, and their horses for months were calling to me, "We need you to come over here. We need you to come over here." And my husband and I were friendly enough with them, but we live in Arizona in a very traditional horse community. But one day I just went over and I said, "Hey, I don't know if you guys know or not, but I'm an animal communicator. And one of your horses or many of your horses are just crying out for me to come, and somebody wants to give a message." So the first horse they bring is, I don't even know if it belongs to the husband or the wife or what have you. So I'm a little confused at this point, and I have no idea what's going to happen. And this beautiful horse comes forward, and just the first thing it says is, "I feel like I'm being replaced and I'm very upset." And both of them look at one another, look at me, almost as if I have two heads and they don't understand what I'm talking about. And I literally am just mortified. And I say, "Well, just put the horse away. I'm so sorry to bother you." And I did do a little bit of a reading on another one of their horses, which they hadn't had for a long time. So it was almost nothing verifiable. And I really went home with my tail between my legs. I really did. The next morning, my husband and I woke up. Oh, dark 30, 5 o'clock, you know, on the ranch, it's dark and we're rummaging around in the house. We have our little robes on, you know, putting coffee in the coffee maker, and the phone rings and it's the neighbor from across the street. And he says, "May I please come over and talk to you?" And I'm like, it's early.
It's still dark.
We're still in our pajamas, but if you're welcome to come and have a cup of coffee if you like. He came over, sat down at the table, looked me straight in the eyes and said, "I'm sorry I lied to you." He said, "I've been thinking about getting replacing this horse for a long time. I'm very unhappy with him. I hadn't yet told my wife, and I wasn't prepared to tell her right in front of." Yeah. So I said, that's okay. You know, it's fine. And the thing is that I knew that that's what the horse said. And I know that animals don't lie. And I'm pretty sure dead people don't lie, you know. So we do.
I joke with my friend all the time because she's an incredible intuitive. And we always say, spirit never lies.
That's right.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's right. And we may have little personalities within us, little voices within us that want us to be protected and not hear the truth. But generally speaking, spirit, whether it be animal or human, does not fib to us. That's for sure. And once we do this enough, once we have enough experiences, thousands of really verifiable experiences, I'm not saying that I don't wake up in doubt every once in a while. And I'm sure that that creeps through your mind too, because if anybody has 100% absolute certainty, I mean, I'm pretty close, but every once in a while I'll think, I really hope something comes through for this client today.
Yeah. I'm nowhere near, you know, I'm probably 50% sometimes, but I think it's about trusting and delivering the message and trusting that even if the message doesn't resonate now, at some point, usually it does, where someone will come back and say, like, my sister-in-law lost her grandmother a while back. And I just, for some reason, I like see objects as like a big thing for me. And I think it's because it ends up being, it's validatable. That's a word. Like it's, you can validate that. Whereas I think messages like, you know, your loved one is safe and they're okay. And they want you to know they love you or they're proud of you. Like some of that sounds generic. So I'll usually get, you know, some of those messages, but I'll also get like random, like I get very random things that seem totally off base. But I said to my sister-in-law something about her grandma was showing me this emerald necklace, and it was like, and I described what the necklace looked like. And sure enough, like she went home, was cleaning out her grandma's stuff. And there was this necklace that she saw that was described it, how it was described. And she knew that was for her. When I said that to her, she had asked her mom, and her mom said, yeah, I've been going through her stuff. I haven't seen anything like that. And then it shows up. So, which again, I think is fascinating just to think about if we're talking about quantum physics, you know, do we create that reality or is that reality already there? That's like a whole other conversation, which I think is so interesting. Like did the ring that I talked with my friend about regarding her husband, did that ring exist? Or when did we bring that ring into reality when I brought it up? That's a conversation you can have with a much smarter scientist.
Yeah, that's not my lane, that's for sure. But speaking of lanes and science, and coming back to my saying that I had some concerns and I wanted to know what you thought about that. And then I think I did go off script a bit. My concern is simply this, and it's not a very simple concern. When we talk about bridging science and spirituality, we then assume, because we said it, bridging science and spirituality, that's going to include some recognition of spirit, of the fact that we are spirit in a body. And one of my major concerns, and I talk about this at least one out of every three shows I do, is that so many of these new modalities and some of the science, especially quantum physics related and often consciousness related, are headed toward a transhumanist agenda. Or if not that extreme, just seek to encourage one to talk about the field, the unified field. You can control the field. The field is at your disposal. Here are mindfulness or meditative techniques, but nothing about spirit and manifest, or you can heal through tapping into the future. You know, there's a very famous doctor who talks about that. And yes, they're helping millions of people. Yes. And it is paving the way toward, I'm hoping, a future that is inclusive of science and spirituality, not just a scientific perspective of the quantum field. So when you've been interviewing some of these very forward-thinking scientists or spiritualists, Do you have a sense of that? Do you share my same?
How would you, because I want to make sure I'm understanding the question. Like, can you give an example? I do much better with examples versus kind of theoretical of how you're seeing that play out.
Okay. So for example, in spiritual communities, and I don't want to call people out by name, certainly.
I don't want
to have a lawsuit on me.
No, I totally get it.
But well, so certain meditative techniques, you can heal yourself. You just tap into the quantum field. There's not a lot of conversation about the choice the soul made in this life to have certain experiences or
right. Healing.
And then there's a lot of emphasis on manifesting. And I think that comes from a lack or poverty consciousness where everybody needs, you know, more money, which I certainly hope our society shifts and changes. And that's not our number one concern anymore. Mm-hmm. It's a legitimate concern. However, when we begin to manifest through the field or, for example, jump timelines, mm-hmm. you know, without consulting our own spirit, I feel that it's a soulless path toward a safer understanding of this our reality. It's safer because you can tie it closer to science and it's not so far afield as someone like me who just woke up one day from a near-death experience and sees multidimensional beings.
Right. What I always kind of come back to is that we chose to be in a human body at this time. And I think that this is, hopefully I'll answer your question, but I think that this is something that we, like, I think one, it's really hard when you're going through a difficult time. And I think it would be for me too, to say, oh, well, I soul contracted this. Because I do think you can, right? Part of the soul contract is that you contracted to grow from various experiences. So while you might, let's use cancer, like you might be inflicted with cancer, how you grow from that experience, you can shift and change. And perhaps some of that shifting and changing is through the quantum field, right? But you might also die from that. And that isn't a failure of you not being able to manifest something. Yeah. And I think that this is why I think it's all right. It's not siloed, because do I think that there's value? And I look at manifesting very differently. Like, I don't think about, like, can I manifest, you know, money? I think it's like, I think about manifesting a feeling, like an experience of, people would say abundance, but like, what do you actually really want to do? Like, what, you know, so that's another conversation. But I think that we need to be thinking about all of these pieces. Like, if you have a between life regression, and in that regression, you learn that one of your exit points is when you are 30 years old, and you get to that 30-year-old point, and then something happens, you're ill or something, like you do have choices at those points, but you also might not. Like, you might have contracted that that's it for you. I think, you know, when I talk about tapping into your soul and listening to your soul, and, you know, there's been a lot, there's so much talk about purpose. I believe our soul is here to express qualities that are our essence. And when we are expressing our essence, then we are in line with our soul. And when we're not expressing that essence, then we are off. You could say we're off purpose versus being on purpose, or we're out of alignment, or we're out of flow, or whatever it is. But I think cutting off, I've never even heard of that before, like cutting off all of those other possibilities. That would scare me a little bit.
We are so hungry, all of us, I think, for answers. And we are in the habit of giving our power away to those whom we perceive to know more than us, or to mm-hmm. have certain abilities, rather than allowing, you know, going to some therapeutic services or using spiritual intuitive services to help us heal the trauma trapped in our nervous system so we can live through the heart. So we can see, sense, feel, taste, hear, experience, spirit within us, and we can emanate that light and that frequency and that experience, which is a shared experience of all humanity, whether some want to recognize that or not.
No, I was just going to say, I agree with you. And, you know, I've been working on developing a course, and I think I told you before we started, I'm working on a book, and all of it is really helping people tap into their own with exercises in like a real sort of prescriptive way of getting there, but not a prescription. It's not like you are this and you have to be this. It's tools to help you discover those parts of yourself on your own, and then how to begin to live them. But I don't prescribe to know what your soul needs. I want to help you tap into that knowledge yourself. I want to help you learn to discern and trust and recognize the subtle shifts and the subtle energies and the subtle changes and the voice that you hear that is your intuition, that's not your ego-driven mind, because they do sound different. And, you know, sometimes I find myself in like a meditation. I'm like, no, don't go. Because like, I don't want to lose that, you know, and there's such a difference when you move into that state of connection with that higher being, with whatever it is, if you want to call it your soul or a collective soul or spirit guides or lost or loved ones. I feel like it's all kind of this source energy that can come through in different vibrational ways, but that it is the message of the soul. And that soul is actually all of our souls. It's not separate. I just went off. I don't even know where I'm going with you. I'm just talking.
It's all beautiful. It's all beautiful. Well, I want to be mindful of your time, and hopefully we'll have some people reach out to you. You're such a lovely, brilliant, truly brilliant. Oh, and you're such a wonderful communicator. I can't wait until your book comes out. I'll be the first one.
Thank you. I've got one sale. I'll use that too when I pitch my proposal. I have one person who's going to buy it. Thank you so much for having me on. This was a great conversation.
You're very welcome. And I invite the listeners to return next week to have another conversation with me, because now is the time for interspecies evolution. The information provided in this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional, medical, psychiatric, or veterinary advice. Our conversations are based on our life's experiences. We intend this podcast to be complementary and supportive. It is not intended to be a substitute for traditional, medical, psychiatric, or veterinary care. If you need a doctor, a psychiatrist, or a veterinarian, please contact one immediately.